the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, I've known our next guest for 35 years or so, and I've always known him in the various guises as a former reporter, as a public relations consultant, as a businessman on the boards of many leading companies, to be an extremely straight shooter. And by God, the new book that he has brought out, Catastrophe, Nakba 2, which is a personal story or an examination of what is happening in Palestine at present, is straight shooting from the hip. Fintan Drury, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
You clearly feel exceptionally passionate about this in a book that is extremely clearly written and is taking a side, isn't it? Unashamedly so.
Oh, unquestionably. And the genesis of that is being on marches, as I have done with in Palestine's cause for many years, but most particularly since the events of 2020, late 2023 and 2024. And words that somebody who you would have known very well also said to me some years ago about the importance of using your skills to do what you can do better than others really resonated with me at a certain point. And I thought, well, yeah, I am a former reporter. I have curiosity, natural curiosity. I have journalistic instincts and training. I can write reasonably well, and I can talk and speak. So why don't I look at this really, really closely? As I became more and more frustrated with the spokespeople for Israel on news programs that I respected, like Channel 4, just being impenetrable, and the interviewers not being able to access anything remotely approaching the truth. So I started to research it, but absolutely, as you suggest, from a pro-Palestine position, having a very strong feeling from when I was a journalist in RTE, when I was presenting programs like Morning Ireland and interviewing people like Bob Fisk maybe once a month, and having a reasonable understanding of this conflict, to use that term, but actually equally knowing that I didn't know and understand it enough, and that a lot of the material that was out there was very dense, kind of academic, very detailed, arguably too detailed. And so I decided what I was going to do was to try and research initially and then go and talk to people around Europe, some Israeli people that I met who were very important access points for me to the story, but also go to Lebanon, Jordan, and to the West Bank.
And something you say very early on in the book, which I think is very important, is that to criticize Israel should not be viewed as being anti-Semitic.
No.
And yet, the communications of the Israeli government and its supporters all around the Western world is, don't you dare criticize Israel, what it's doing. Don't even believe the evidence of your own eyes. Believe what we tell you.
Well, the conflation of criticism of Israel and anti-Semitism is a tactic of the Israeli government and has been for decades, but it's been particularly pronounced over the last, you know, couple of years. And it is a feature of coverage in a lot of the Western media of this issue. And the aforementioned Bob Fisk spoke in 2010 about the fact that, you know, it's an insult to people to describe their criticism of the state of Israel as being anti-Semitic. I'm chairman of Sport Against Racism in Ireland. I'm very active on migration issues. You know, to describe somebody as being anti-Semitic is to describe them as a racist. You can criticize the state of Israel and have no beef with the Jewish people, the people for whom Judaism is their faith. And in fact, in 2020, 350 leading Israeli Jewish academics around the world issued what they call the Universal Declaration on Anti-Semitism. And one of the things they say very clearly in it, it is not anti-Semitic to criticize the state of Israel.
One of the things that's happening at present, which I think is appalling everybody and has belatedly led our government, or at least our Taoiseach and Taoiseach, to describe what is happening as genocide, is the use of famine as a tool of war. it appears to us, despite the denials of Israel, denying what we can see, that they are stopping the shipments of food getting through, and also crucially have destroyed the entire agricultural infrastructure to allow people to feed themselves. Tell us what you've found on that.
Yeah, the destruction of the agricultural infrastructure goes back 20 years, at least, maybe more. And there's an organisation in London called Forensic Architecture that has done phenomenal work on tracking this through satellite imagery, through people on the ground. And they have published report after report, which shows the extent to which Israel has deliberately targeted the agricultural capacity, which was very rich, of Palestine, and in particular of the people in Gaza, and their capacity to feed themselves, which they were quite capable of doing. And they have shrunk that and shrunk it year in, year out. But over the last 20 months or so, they've obliterated that capacity. In addition, as you know, there's a long-term blockade, and so people can't get in or out. And therefore, the people who have been bombarded for the last 20 months are now incapable of finding food from their own natural resources. And they're penned in, and they're not letting aid in. But then, as again today, you know, 27 people that murdered by the IDF.
Hamas, who say Hamas is stopping these people getting access to the food that we are allowing in.
Well, I mean, again, this is 3 days in a row, unless I'm mistaken, when over 25 people have been murdered as they queued and tried. And naturally, there was an element of a stampede where people are desperate to get food and some level of nutrition. And why would Hamas kill their own people? They don't need to do it. Israel are doing it for them and have been doing it for them at a scale which is unprecedented in the modern world, in this part of the world. And I mean, we also need to recognize that Israel is talked about. It likes to profess itself to be a Western-style democracy in the Middle East. It's not. It's not even a democracy. It's an ethnocracy.
Explain that.
Well, an ethnocracy has all the clothes of a democracy, except its only interest is in the welfare of a particular ethnicity. And so
given that about 20% those living in Israel are Palestinian, yeah, not necessarily still citizens of Israel.
No, well, they are, but they're second class citizens. And Nelson Mandela himself said that after he was released, one of his first interviews, he said that the situation as he understood it in Palestine then, in Israel then, for the Palestinian citizens, was a more acute form of apartheid than what he had challenged in South Africa.
And yet there are some who would have it that this all started in October 2023. What you've done in the book is go back not just to recent decades, but going back as far as the establishment of the State of Israel back in the 1940s, as a response by the United Nations in 1947 the atrocity, to the appalling things that happened during the Holocaust. Do you believe, should the State of Israel even exist?
No, is the short answer. But I think that the State of Israel, I think the more correct answer is that the State of Israel in its current form should not exist. And there are many Jews who believe that the State of Israel is an anachronism, that they don't need a state. And that, in fact, there are Jews who are perfectly happy living all over the world in different countries, different cities, and they don't need to have their own state. Now, I think ultimately the difficulties go back to 1948, as you and before that, in terms of the Balfour Agreement of 1917, when the British government essentially handed the land of Palestine over to the Zionists, over to Israel.
At the time, the population was something like 6% of the area, and then it increased to about 33% by the end of the Second World War, before you had the influx of refugees from Europe.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it is interesting for those who are sort of new to this or keen to understand more about it, that the only dissenting voice at the cabinet table in 1917 was a man called Edward Montagu, who wrote a very clear letter to the then Prime Minister of Britain saying, do not do this. This is going to have really serious consequences. Israel, the Jews do not need to have a state. And here are the and he set out consequences which have come through. He was the only Jewish member of that cabinet.
He was the one. See, when you say that you don't believe the state of Israel should exist as it was formed, that's the type of thing that Israel jumps on immediately as being anti-Semitic and favouring the terrorists as they see it of Hamas and Hezbollah
sure.
and others.
Well, I mean, I'm here to tell the truth as I see it. And, you know, how that is viewed by other parties is their business. But in my criticism of the state of Israel and the way in which the state of Israel has been configured, that is not a criticism of Jewish people. That is not a criticism of the Jewish faith. To criticize the Jewish faith or to criticize Jews as an ethnic group would be racist, would be anti-Semitic.
One last thing, Fintan. I suppose Ireland is something of an outlier in the European Union in a position it's taken in opposing what Israel has done as a response to the Hamas attack of 2023. Other countries like Spain and Norway have also in Europe shown strong positions in relation to this. How much of this do you think is down to, I suppose, a sense of collective sense of guilt in Europe for a feeling that they didn't do enough to stop the Holocaust? And even if, ironically, much of what Israel is doing now bears a very strong resemblance as to what happened to the Jews during the Holocaust, they get almost a free pass to do it out of a historical, residual, collective sense of guilt.
Well, I think that's a huge factor. I dedicate the book to my mother, who went to her grave over 20 years ago, and she was very, very concerned about the fact that, you know, during in her youth, Ireland had failed and her faith, the Catholic Church, had failed the Jewish people in at the time of the Second World War.
And she said she never wanted to see something like that happen again. And this is what you're cataloguing in Palestine and Gaza and Israel. We have to leave it there. It's a superb book, Catastrophe, Nagpa 2. You'll understand the subtitle when you read the book. Fintan Drury, thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.